Wait, we're already going. Hi, I'm Alex Hirsch, the creator of Gravity Falls.
I'm Jason Ritter, the voice of Dipper.
And I'm Kristen Schaal, the voice of Mabel.
And this is the Time Traveler's Pig. This is one of my personal favorite first episodes from season one. Because at this point in the series, we were still figuring out, like, the tone of the show, how spooky is it, how much of it is a sitcom. And this episode, to me, felt really funny. It felt really sweet. I really liked the rules of the magic of the adventure of it. Just, you know, like, and the balance of every character has something that they want and it's all connected. We've talked in other episodes about my utter lack of experience in show running at this stage. And this is one of the episodes where I started to think, like, oh, this show can actually work. Like this is a charming cast and it's a good location for magical weirdness. The red screwdriver that Grunkle Stan just made reference to has a lot of importance in season two. That's the screwdriver that Seuss returns to the Mystery Shack that gets him a job at the Mystery Shack.
Oh my gosh, I never knew that.
We tracked these things and it's the one that Blendon stole in the scene. And it's of course Justin Roiland. Who,
yeah.
I don't think he hadn't been Lemon Grab. Rick and Morty hadn't started. So I discovered him. It's all mine. All the royalties for Rick and Morty go to me, guys.
The Yula guys were friends in college, right?
I was a fan of his in college because I would watch his Channel 101 videos on, like, it was before YouTube. I'd watch them as MOV files. And then when I came to Disney Channel, I was doing some development for them on the show called Fishhooks. And I was in an office, bored out of my mind. I was really alone because there's no one else there. And they said, well, you want to work with somebody? Here's people on our list. And I said, Roiland, I'm a fan of his. And I was like, he's got such a funny, weird voice. If I ever get a TV show, I have to put him in. And now he's every voice on every show. I knew him before he was overrated, guys. No, he's the best. He's so funny.
He's my friend. No, is he my friend? He's my friend.
We're all going to fight over him. So the sort of origin of the concept of this episode was my twin sister always was obsessed with pigs. She had this shrine of pig toys when we were little kids. And, like, at this point now, she's, like, sick of it. Like, people still give her pig socks for Christmas, and she's like, there's no way to get out of it at this point.
Yeah.
One of our writers, Ori Wallington, who also worked on this episode, growing up, she had a pig named Waddles.
Oh.
Really?
And it was, like, the cutest name. So, like, she gets credit for... Like, the Waddles' cuteness, a lot of the suggestions came from her. But that was one thing I also knew before the series began. I was like, Mabel needs to get a pig at some point during the show for no other reason than, as we've mentioned in other episodes, to show that change is possible. So
yes.
She wants to have a pet. She gets it. Next week, she's still got it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you think of T.J. Miller for this part?
I think we actually went through a few different... people for this part, and I got to give Disney casting credit. They'd heard him in, I think, maybe Cloverfield or something, and they played a clip, and I could completely believe him just being this cocky dude. This is a good read.
Thank you.
This is me doing my worst Foghorn Leghorn impression. I'm another character. How about this?
Aw, look at him. He said Mabel.
Who does the oinks?
I think D. Bradley Baker, very talented voice actor and can do a lot of animal noises.
Oh, Pacifica. Sir, I must have that pig. Oh, 15 poundy.
Yeah, Farmer Sprott is not too bright. This character, I think, designed by Aaron Springer, our director. Really, really funny director. And the weirdest expressions and funniest poses always come from him.
I love this line coming up. Everything is different
now.
Yeah.
I've never had a child, but I imagine that's how you feel when you see your baby in your arms for the first time, is that everything is different now.
It is. And I just had a baby.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Was it just like this?
Everything
was
is different now.
Was the baby 15 pounds?
Almost. But the Waddles is Mabel's only love romance that lasts the summer, really.
that's true. Mabel is very prone to love at first sight, and Waddles is able to love back with Mabel's degree of love. So this is this is the second time we've seen that ice bag, and the ice is in the Bill Cipher Zodiac in the theme song. our thought was that when we designed that Bill Cipher Zodiac for the theme song, like, hate to demystify it for the fans, but that literally was when we were putting the theme song together, I just figured, let's have a cool image. I don't know what it means. I don't know if it means anything. And originally, the image was of a six-fingered hand. And then I discovered that the TV show Fringe had a six-fingered hand in its intro.
Oh.
So I was in an art meeting, and I was late for another meeting. And I told Ian, our art director, like, let's just make it like a Mayan zodiac calendar. Let's put Bill in the center. Let's put some spooky symbols around. I gotta go. And I came back.
But you put, I mean, like Robbie's shirt, or did you make Robbie's sweatshirt that after you created the Cipher Wheel?
Well, the theme song wasn't done until about episode 7 as well. So at that point, we just looked through the series to symbols that we had seen that seemed memorable. And so it was like Robbie's heart, Stan's Fez, Dipper and Mabel. And then there's just a few other ones where we're like, ice, I guess. A llama, because we had done Headhunters and Larry King says llamas are nature's greatest warriors. Like, it didn't really mean a lot. And because it only existed for a single frame, we figured like, a couple people will notice this.
Yeah.
And then when it became such an important, like, people were obsessed with it, we were like, oh, we should probably make this part of the show somehow. So that's why, I mean, again, I hate to demystify it for people who want to believe there's a grand plan, but that's why Wendy being the ice bag and Pacifica being the llama, like, we came up with explanations later for why, but it doesn't make as much sense as, like, Dipper with the pine tree hat, you know?
Every once in a while, there are like little clues in, like that, right? Isn't that the Tyrannosaur episode?
We see a little glimpse of Fight Fighters, a little glimpse of Land Before Swine. And again, that's just because animation is so slow. At the point that we were finishing this episode, we were beginning those episodes, and we had enough art. And I was just like, oh, stick it in at the last second.
That's so cool.
Just give a little bit of a hint. Because regular television network like production is not supposed to allow for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, also, an animation takes so long. Yeah, never mind.
That any last-minute thought also takes long?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Time travel is something that I, as a kid, probably thought about daily.
I did, too.
Like, I was constantly doing and saying things that I felt like I screwed up and wishing I could rewind them and wanting to fast-forward childhood and skip to some imaginary adulthood where life might be easier. Jason, what would you do with the time machine, Jason?
Oh boy, I've now watched so many movies that with time travel.
Have you been cautioned away from it? Do you fear the butterfly effect?
I'm nervous that I would mess something up, and then. But the thing,
spoken like a true Dipper.
The horrible secret is that you would come back to a new universe. And everything would be different, but you're the only one who knows
what you've done. Yeah.
Like, everyone else has just gone through their entire lives because they're in another timeline.
I mean, that's assuming there's just one time stream.
No, that's what I mean. Like,
if you're hopping to another time stream and those things exist parallel to each other, then, like, you could hop to a future time stream, screw things up, and if you're like, uh-oh, just time to bounce to the first one, right? Like, so you need not just a time machine, you need a dimension hopping machine.
Yes, exactly.
And then you're good.
And then I'm good. Then I'm totally
Then you're golden.
Yeah. Ooh, there it is. That was your first mistake, Blendon.
We like the idea of having a time traveler who, I don't think we'd seen a lot of time travelers who were just completely incompetent at their job. Like, the idea of somebody with this godly power who just should not have any of this level of responsibility. We drew a lot of designs. Whenever we start an episode, we put a big whiteboard in the writer's room, and we just, like, I'll just get there, and everyone shouts out suggestions, and I just draw stuff, and we try to figure out, like, oh, who's our time traveler? And I think this guy was a caricature of our head writer at the time, Dan McGrath. we're just like, let's make Dan the time traveler, and everybody loved it, so.
Well, speaking of silhouettes, is that... what is that coming out of Mabel's head on top? Is it just like messy hair?
Oh, that little floof?
Yeah.
That hair floof? That was in animation design, you're always trying to create like a silhouette that's like specific and memorable so that if you blacked out Bart Simpson or you completely filled in SpongeBob as just a silhouette, just from the shape you would recognize him.
Yeah.
And I was looking for some just little dumb thing to break that shape. When Super Mario doesn't wear a hat, he's got those little floofs.
Oh, yeah!
I just stuck them in because I'm a big Nintendo fan.
That.
Like, it was, I think it was self-conscious.
Like messy hair.
That's so
it's just
cool.
Supposed to be messy hair, yeah.
That's, I never realized that.
I got to give credit to the artists on this episode. Directed by Aaron Springer, a lot of the scenes of this were storyboarded by Eric Fountain, who did a bunch of intense expressions. I'd say the hardest part of this episode was figuring out... We like this idea of... Dipper has this very, like, naive and forgivable, but ultimately, you know, wrong idea about romance. He's got that first summer crush thing where it's... He would die 1,000 deaths to have her feel the same way. And I think many people have an unrequited love. They know what that feeling is like. But in Dipper's mind, he has to convolute a perfect moment with her. He can't just let things happen.
Right.
And this idea that, oh, she likes Robbie and she got hit in the eye with this, like, in his mind, he needs to, I mean, it's sort of like Groundhog Day. He needs to
make
needs
the perfect day.
Make this perfect day because he's not perfect enough on his own. And for this reason, he does not deserve to get what he wants.
Yes.
Because his idea about the world and how it works should not be rewarded. But we had to figure out kind of a way to have his want and Mabel's want be against each other somehow.
Yes. Mabel's little flower in her hair is cute.
Well, that was another thing that we were trying to do to just suggest her personality was every week a different sweater. And Dipper never changes his outfit, which you guys are sitting with me right now. I'm probably wearing the same shirt that I wore for 90% of our record. So I'm like Dipper. I have no sense of fashion. I'm terrible at making choices.
Like, do you have five of those shirts?
Yeah, I'm just like Superman with all of the, or Doug Funny with all of the sweater vests.
Like Michael Jackson, he'd like look in his closet at a certain point and it'd just be like.
I'm exactly like Michael Jackson, guys.
Yeah.
I'm a talented pop star. This is kind of messed up that Waddles is eating pepperoni.
Why? Oh.
He ate around the pepperoni.
It was originally a hot dog.
It was soy pepperoni or whatever they call it.
It was actually in the storyboard originally a hot dog. I was like, that's kind of messed up. Change it to something else. And then I didn't notice it later. Like, oh, the pig's still kind of
I don't know what pepperoni is, I guess.
It's made of pig, right?
Is
I don't
it?
Know. It's some kind of...
I've never questioned it. It's just like discs of meat.
Windspeed, factoring cotton candy.
Face it, Dipper. You're obviously fated to have a bad day at the fair. Just like I'm fated to be with Waddles.
It's like there's one variable missing.
What's a variable?
Oh, that's it! I figured out a way to win.
This is the only time in the series that we see Dipper doing, like, advanced math.
Yeah, like, he's like Goodwill Hunting it.
Yeah, I always, I didn't want Dipper to be, like, prodigy level good at math. Like, I wanted him to be of relatively realistic intelligence for, like, a middle schooler. I didn't want him to turn into that, like, just like, oh, according to my calculations, I'm IQ from the BK Kids Club.
All right, that voice was offensive.
But if anything, this would be the thing that would drive him to find the calculations.
If there's any
needed.
Time that Dipper would get this good at math, it would be to undo his awful moment with Wendy.
And this is incredibly impressive what happened here, by the way. I mean, come on. That's the power of math, guys.
Why
if
don't
you learn
they,
how to do math?
They should sell those dolls.
Oh, that came from I love county fairs because they're like often just kind of gross and sad and run by like teen carnies and there's a sense of you might die and that amuses me. And I also love that they have such awful bootleg prizes.
Oh yeah.
That like you'll see SpongeBob
kind of off-brand,
but
slightly
yeah, he's
weird.
Got the face of Mr. Incredible. Like so we wanted to honor that feeling of. At Grunkle Stan's Mystery Fair, everything is the cheapest, worst option.
No. Pacifica doesn't even appreciate him.
No, look at her. And Waddles can tell. Waddles.
Yeah.
One of many millions of screams we forced Kristen to do for this series.
Let's go get some Dipper. I love funnel cake.
This is a long take.
Yeah. I got good lungs.
Always makes me laugh.
And this wasn't one take. This was probably five.
Knowing me, yeah, it was 50 takes. Until you're bleeding, it's not good enough, Kristen.
Again.
Are you an animal person, Kristen, in real life?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and no, I'm not.
Did you grow up on a farm?
Yeah.
Is that why
farm?
You took exception to the word hick before?
Well, I just knew what a hick was.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would get a cut, but I'm good.
And you didn't have any like positive feelings towards the pigs on your farm.
We didn't have pigs, but I know pigs are smart, so I have felt bad about eating pork chops lately, but I still, like, my husband has a great pork chop recipe. Do you guys eat pigs?
Yeah.
I try not to, but, you know, they're delicious.
Are, apparently they're as smart as dogs.
I've heard even smarter.
This this third act was probably the last thing that we wrote for this episode because we knew what we wanted Dipper and Mabel to do in terms of their storyline. But we you often see the same cliches in time travel stories, which is it's just a robot future or a dinosaur. And we wanted to see that, but I wanted to get a little Oregon-y. So like I wrote this scene in at the last minute of like what feels specific to Gravity Falls. I like that Mabel has no idea how old anything is and thinks this might be the 70s.
Why does this baby over here have a Band-Aid on its chin? Alex, is it possible that is Fiddleford?
I've had a lot of people. I actually think that based on our canon, it probably couldn't be.
Because of the age.
He'd need to be like the Highlander.
But it did send a lot of people
It did send a lot of people
flurry.
Wondering.
And yeah. I know all the theories, guys. I've done all the research.
These characters, I believe, were designed by Phil Rindo, one of our character designers. He did an excellent job of just sort of miserable-looking frontier children.
I played Oregon Trail in elementary school.
I loved Oregon Trail. The only thing that was messed up about Oregon Trail is that you know, it was like name all your family, so you'd name them after your family members if you're not creative.
You're
like
the
I
only
was.
Person who didn't call them, like, Poopface and Buttman.
No, I was just like, Tyler, Carly, and then,
and then you get
like,
to watch
sister,
them die.
Yeah, died of dysentery.
The majority of people watching this don't know what Oregon Trail is.
Oh, that's sad.
Oh, I know.
For you little kids out there, Oregon Trail was a game.
A survival game
in, like, the 80s and 90s where...
Computers were first invented.
Yeah, they were black and neon green.
Yes.
And you would learn about how to ration tallow, which serves me in my adult life all the time. So this was our big reveal of the blend and stuff.
And look at that shack. Look at the old mystery shack. Why does it look different? You probably know because you watched it.
We knew, of course, at this point that Stan had a twin brother who ran the shack, but we didn't know exactly what he looked like. So his design there looks pretty different from how Ford ends up looking. Like, it's the right vibe, but...
But it's also not Uncle Grunkle Stan.
It's like not Stan.
And you... This was one of the only times where I got a clue where you went... You showed me that still, and you went, within this frame is one of the biggest secrets of Gravity Falls. And I spent so long looking in the background. I was like, what does that little picture mean? I didn't realize it was the... Yeah, anyway, I should have picked up on it.
But. Well, and originally that in the storyboards, you saw his six fingers. He was peeking through the door, and you saw a six-fingered hand. And I made us cut that at the last second. I was like, oh, that's going to give it away.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
too much. They're going to figure it out.
Yeah, I just thought maybe it was a younger Grunkle Stan, but I didn't realize. Yeah.
That's the red herring worked on you.
It did. It totally did. Even though you pointed it out to me directly, I still didn't pick it up. Oh, Mabel.
Oh, my God.
So this idea that Mabel would be so heartbroken that she would just bang her head against a...
Totem pole
for literally weeks and months is like, this is definitely stretching like our cartoon logic of like, real Mabel probably wouldn't do that for that long, but
she's in love.
We definitely felt that we needed to use, if time travel got us into this, time travel needed to get us out, and we thought there was a unique way to use time travel to suggest the depth of Mabel's longing.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell myself that, like, at the same time every day in commemoration of this moment, she comes out and bangs her head against this, but then, you know, still goes back and, like, eats a sandwich.
Well, yeah. The vines are growing on her, though, and it has to...
Miserable Mabel, the girl who went bonkers after her dreams were shattered by some heartless jerk. Oh, hey, Dipper!
I don't know if it's a duck or a panda, but I want one.
Wendy, I just wanted to say that, well, I just...
This is our sort of Dipper being a little bit more mature here, accepting his and Wendy's fate because time has ordained that this is going to happen.
And a one and a two and a...
One of the problems with tight pants, guys, is that you can't put stuff in your pockets.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
Big
and
pocket
fan. And I also saw a guy in my school who would jam his hands into his tight pants and then walk around, and I saw him trip, and he could not get his hands out of his
tight pockets. In time to brace
pockets,
himself?
In time to brace himself, and he basically, like, face planted.
That's hilarious.
He was okay.
I wish we had thought of that for Robbie, because that's such a good tight pants gag. So another one of the thoughts that we had kind of about villains in the series was, like, whenever we had a character that we really liked, thought was funny or thought was memorable, like Blendin, we hated the idea that they would just get defeated. We have, particularly in season one, a lot of villains swearing vengeance. Jeff the Gnome swears vengeance. Blendin swears vengeance. Because, like, it was our intent to eventually get back to him. Oh, I got another shout out to our storyboard artist, Eric Fountain. He's the one who gave them the names Lolf and Dungren. I think we told him, like, yeah, you know, give these guys an outfit like Dolph Lundgren in some time travel movie. And Lolf and Dungren became their canon names for the rest of the series.
That is hilarious. Also, though, Blendin and a bunch of the other villains, a lot of them have sort of changes of heart, or the help, or, you know.
Sure, yeah.
It's very, aside from
they're multidimensional,
Bill,
aren't they?
Who's pure evil.
Well, it sort of gets boring to play the same note again and again of just vengeance, 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 vengeance. So generally, and also for Blendin, we didn't think of him as a villain. We just thought of him as... just a guy who's a big loser who got to be a time traveler and is screwing up at his job. And, like, even though he's quick to anger, like, we felt a little sympathy for him. Like, Dipper and Mabel getting him sent to time prison. Like,
yeah, that's rough.
You feel a little bad. This is an Aaron Springer drawing coming up. That insane Waddle's face. Only Aaron could draw a pig that hilarious. I don't know if tight pants really worked that way, but it worked for the gag. And of course, our reference to Babe here, which was my favorite movie when I was 10. I was like, that talking pig melted my heart.
I forgot we do see the Time Baby.
And of course, the first appearance of Time Baby. Time Baby was on our white board of, like, different ideas for who a time traveler could be, and one of them was a time baby, which was so stupid that it made everyone laugh, so we found a way to put him into the episode.
Now, but there was also a mention of the time baby in one of the, in the Quentin Tremblay underground thing, if you pause on
that. Yeah, well, we were sort of making them all concurrently and finding as many ways to hook up these episodes as possible.
Guys.